Amateur astronomers observed the heavens in part for the advancement of science. But now, as in centuries past, they do it mostly for the simple love of astronomy. Tomorrow, a special meeting will take place concerning the role of amateurs in astronomy. We'll talk more about it then. For July 30th, that's Star Date. For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
The number you have reached has been changed. The new number has been disconnected.
Möchten Sie etwas zu trinken haben?
Dies ist viel besser.
Already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What Möchten did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
Good evening, Vice President Nixon.
Good evening, Mr. Hall.
Welches sind die Regenbogenfarben?
If you do not push a key in 3 seconds, you will be disconnected.
Mein Bruder ist jünger als ich.
Very good. Good evening to one and all. The program is Brain Damage. The time is 10:08. I'm Eric Corley, and I'm here until midnight with your phone calls and a couple of other interesting things. One of the interesting people that's around is Rob Franza in the other studio. Say hello, Rob.
Hello, Rob.
Oh, boy, you certainly are loud. Let's see if I can get a good level on you there. You want to say that again?
Hello, Rob.
That's better. Okay, let's turn all these phones off and say hi to the folks. Our phone number is 632-6901, and we're here tonight to talk about a very relevant topic around here. If our listeners listen or read the newspapers, they will have seen a very important news item on the front page of today's New York Times, one that involves us almost directly, fairly, as directly as you can possibly get. Entitled, Court Rejects an FCC Curb on Indecency in Broadcasts. If you've tuned into Brain Damage over the last several weeks, or actually even several months, we've been talking about indecency, censorship, all that kind of thing, and how it affects us here at a non-commercial radio station. What I'm going to do is go through the article, article as it appears today in the New York Times. And we have a record side by Jello Biafra, which we want to get to, where he talks about censorship and how it affected him. We want to take your phone calls. We might even have a chance to talk to some folks on the West Coast who have been directly affected by all this. And whatever else happens, happens. So let's take a look at the article. Today's New York Times, the front page. A federal appeals court ruled today, or yesterday actually, that a Federal Communications Commission ban on the broadcasting of indecent language during evening hours violated the rights of free speech. Kind of the things we were saying around here, I guess almost word for word. They did violate freedom of speech by telling us we couldn't broadcast in what they considered indecent language until after midnight and before 6 a.m. The three judges of the appeals court ruled that the commission had not shown that a ban in the evening hours was necessary to prevent substantial numbers of unsupervised children from seeing or hearing such material, but the court upheld other aspects of the FCC's 1987 order restricting such broadcasts, including the ban on broadcasting indecent material between 6 a.m. and 10 a.m. That's the morning period, particularly the time when you might hear someone like Howard Stern, and that was who that law was designed to affect, because he was doing all kinds of indecent things then. So there is a ban on broadcasting indecent material between 6 a.m. and 10 a.m., one specific ban. There's also an overall ban on it between 6 a.m. and the new time now, which is 10 p.m., not midnight. Continuing, the court also upheld the FCC definition of such material as describing or depicting in terms patently offensive as measured by contemporary community standards for the broadcast medium, sexual or excretory activities and organs. That is the definition of indecency or indecent material. Now, the case will now go back to the FCC, which must either return to the 10 p.m. period, which is which was the hour when broadcasters may begin to transmit indecent material. And by the way, it's 12 minutes after 10 o'clock now, in case anyone's interested. Or they must produce stronger evidence for the contention that large numbers of unsupervised children would be exposed to such material between 10 p.m. and midnight. They would have to, I'm not quite sure how they would go about doing this, but they would have to prove that there are large bands of small kids listening to the radio right about now, kids that have no supervision whatsoever. I really don't know how they would go about proving that. It's my belief that they will simply go back to the 10 p.m. hour, which is certainly more reasonable than the midnight hour, and directly affects us here at the radio station as far as how much sleep we get worrying about this kind of thing. Now, getting back to the article, the decision casts doubt on the constitutionality of proposed legislation that the Senate adopted this week. Are you ready for this? This legislation would require the commission to ban indecent programming 24 hours a day. The Senate adopted this past week. I didn't even hear about this. This is a paragraph in this story that should have been page one of every newspaper. This wasn't even page one of every newspaper. Just to repeat that, so it kind of hits home there. The Senate adopted legislation this week that would require the FCC, Federal Communications Commission, to ban indecent programming 24 hours a day. What is indecent programming? That's really a hard thing to define. It could be anything from a stray obscenity in a popular song to something that someone just finds offensive. Getting back to the definition, in terms patently offensive as measured by contemporary community standards for the broadcast medium, it's really hard to define. But anyway, it's now likely that that Senate legislation that was adopted this week will be rather ineffective. Getting back to the FCC, their 1987 order was intended to tighten its own previous restrictions, which had sought to shield children by banning the repetitious use of certain four-letter dirty words in broadcast before 10 p.m. That order broadened the definition of indecent material and banned the broadcasting of such material before midnight. The Supreme Court, in a 1978 decision, had ruled that the commission could ban as indecent the daytime broadcasting of a monologue by the comedian George Carlin, known as Filthy Words, in order to shield children from such material. Those, of course, contain the seven dirty words came out of that whole George Carlin WBAI incident. Again, those are not considered obscene. They're considered indecent. So material like that can be aired after 10 p.m. with a disclaimer, according to what the FCC is saying this week, or what the federal courts are saying this week. Judge Ruth Bader Ginsburg's opinion today, in which judges Spotswood W. Robinson III and David B. Sentell joined, stressed that broadcast material that is indecent but not obscene is protected by the First Amendment. Amen. We've been trying to get them to say that for a while, but This sure feels good to hear it, finally. Judge Ginsburg said that the broadcast of such material to adults could not be restricted except insofar as necessary to shield unsupervised children, and that the commission's only basis for regulating such material is not to establish itself as censor, but to assist parents in controlling the material young children will hear. Judge Ginsburg said the commission had not shown that enough unsupervised children would be exposed to such broadcasts during the evening hours before midnight to justify banning indecent broadcasts during those hours, or at least between 10 p.m. and midnight. On the other hand, the court upheld the commission's ban on such programming between 6 a.m. and 10 a.m., including its warning to a New York City talk show, of which the host is Howard Stern, not to use indecent material during its 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. airtime. The Stern Show was one of several test cases in the issue of broadcasting indecent material in those morning hours. The court overturned warnings given by the FCC to the student-run radio station KCSB-FM in Santa Barbara, California, which broadcast the song Makin' Bacon, and to a Pacifica Foundation Incorporated radio station, KPFA, in Los Angeles, which broadcast a play entitled Jerker, about the sexual fantasies of a homosexual man. Both of these broadcasts took place between 10 p.m. and midnight. Judge Ginsburg did not specify the right time in the evening for the broadcast of indecent material, leaving that for the commission to determine in further proceedings, subject to further appeals. But I think what the three judges said quite clearly is that the midnight hour is a bit much. And while the FCC has the right to establish the time that indecent material can be aired, they have to be more or less sensible about it, and making it midnight is kind of ridiculous. That's how I read this this ruling here. And keep in mind, too, that the song broadcast by KCSB and the radio play broadcast by KPFA were not deemed obscene. They were deemed indecent. And originally, I believe the FCC had wanted to get them on obscenity. So that's that could be considered a major victory for all of us. Not just radio broadcasters, but really all of us. Timothy B. Dick, I guess how you pronounce it, D-Y-K, a Washington lawyer representing a coalition of 17 plaintiffs in the case, including the three broadcasting networks and public interest groups, including Action for Children's Television, said today, well, this Washington lawyer said this today, or yesterday, it seems to me it's a substantial victory which vindicates the coalition's position that this is protected speech and that the adult audience should have access to it. The court held that the commission's sole interest here is to give parents the opportunity to supervise their children, and that rationale suggests possibly moving the hour even earlier than 10 p.m. This is not about sex talk on the telephone. We're talking about things that have very substantial literary and informational value, including some favorably reviewed plays that come potentially under this broad definition of indecency. But Dennis R. Patrick, chairman of the commission, the Federal Communications Commission, and Diane S. Killery, the general counsel, get this, they actually said their side had won. I do think that the commission got a substantial victory in this decision, Ms. Killery said. The court affirmed our authority to regulate the broadcasting of indecent material so that parents can be sure that their children not be exposed to it. Judge Ginsburg rejected arguments by various plaintiffs that the commission's definition of indecent material was unconstitutionally vague, holding that the 1978 Supreme Court decision foreclosed this argument. She also rejected arguments that the definition was unconstitutionally broad because it restricted the times at which some material that has social value may be broadcast. The FCC may regulate such material only with due respect for the high value our Constitution places on freedom of choice in what the people say and hear, the judge said, adding that it must afford broadcasters clear notice of reasonably determined times at which indecent material safely may be aired. And that is the article that was on the front page of today's New York Times. And as is the case when such things happen, and they have been happening with increasing frequency over the last couple of years, these rulings are handed down, we're kind of left here to try to figure out what it all means. And right now, we seem to think that it's good news. We seem to feel a little bit more relaxed as far as what can be aired over the airwaves and that kind of thing. Rob, I assume you're still there.
I'm here, Eric.
What are your impressions of all this, having heard that and having read it before?
Yeah, I'm somewhat apprehensive about the ruling, but I think it is there's some victory here for us as broadcasters and other community and college broadcasters across the country. Some definite, tangible victory, but it seems that it's partial, perhaps temporary relief from the kind of FCC regulation we've been laboring under.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just, you know, I'd like to see what happens. It seems that the appeals court has left the door open to the FCC to respond once again, and I guess this thing could be bouncing around a court for a while.
Yeah, because, you know, in a couple of months, another thing could come down and say something completely different. We're kind of like a, you know, a ping-pong ball here. We have no idea where we're going to go next.
Right.
We feel, you know, I think we feel as broadcasters as if something good has happened because the FCC has, I mean, the headline of the piece is Court Rejects an FCC Curb on Indecency in Broadcast. So pretty much what we've been saying over the last few months has been backed up by another court.
Definitely.
And I feel great about that. And programs like Turmoil, which is on the air here and plays hardcore music, those kind of programs are a little bit more, will be a little bit more relaxed as far as not having to worry about what's being played over the air all the time. If there's a stray obscenity in a song that can't even be called an obscenity because it's not used in an obscene manner.
Nor can it many times be audible to the average listener.
That's exactly true. It's confused us. This whole mess has confused us quite a bit.
I would say, Eric, that and while at least, I mean, I'm taking a rather remote stance on this, but I say at least superficially there's a definite victory, and it's nice to see that kind of rhetoric on the front page of the New York Times, but at the same time, there are some very basic contradictions about this entire issue that remain intact, and I don't see any kind of resolution to those contradictions in what I'm reading here. I mean,
well, what's a contradiction?
Well, it seems to be a battle between free speech and the rights of children not to be exposed to quote-unquote indecent material. The judges, in the very first paragraph of the article you read, they are immediately speaking about the violation of the rights of free speech, which, if anything in this age, can be called an absolute, something that we pound on the table about when we talk about democracy and the American model of democracy. One of those things is free speech. But it gets qualified later on in the argument, in the article, because that free speech is only protected at certain times of the day.
Uh-huh.
And there just doesn't seem to be any clear path to a better understanding of this issue. I think we definitely came out on top this week, but I think it remains to be seen.
Now, the thing that really threw me, though, reading this story, just it was in there almost as an afterthought, was that Senate legislation. And what would that have meant had that actually made it? Where that would ban indecency 24 hours a day.
That really jumped out at me when I read this as well. I had not heard a word about this anywhere, even on your...
Who voted for that, you know?
That's right.
Did our senators
vote for proposed
that?
It to begin with?
I'd sure like to find that out, because that would mean that there would be just so much. We'd have to listen to every single minute of every single piece of music that we would play and plan out everything we were going to say in advance in the hopes that we wouldn't appear to be indecent to anybody. And it would be almost impossible. It would be impossible. It wouldn't make this worthwhile, I can tell you that.
That's absolutely
true.
We
might as well be a Muzak station then.
Mm-hmm.
And that's indecent, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. I'd like to open up the phones to the listeners before we play some Jello Biafra words. Our number is 632-6901, area code 516. Let us know how you as listeners feel about all this.
Eric, one more point before we go to the phones. It's interesting that one of the groups that was a plaintiff in the case is known as the Action for Children's Television. One would imagine that I don't really know about this group, but I would imagine that they, will push for legislation and regulations that would be beneficial to children in broadcast media. And here they are standing beside the broadcasters who are trying to get the FCC to relax their regulation of the airwaves. So that's another interesting slant, given the fact that the appeals court says that the whole justification for regulating the airwaves is to protect the children. They say there is no other reasoning behind the ruling besides that, to protect children from hearing indecent material.
Uh-huh. Plus the three networks, three commercial networks,
that's right,
were part of the suit. So that is public interest groups.
That seems to be the crux of the issue right now, is whether is this the issue about children in the audience.
Uh-huh. And I think children can handle a lot more than we give them credit for. It's not going to adversely affect them if they hear, I mean, they hear, you know, all kinds of language in the streets. So I'm not saying, you know, just broadcast that kind of language all the time, but really all that we here at WUSB want is to be able to continue working as programmers, independent producers, and allow the station standards to hold forth and not have to worry about what some fundamentalist is going to think.
Well, and also I guess the question is, to what degree is this issue of children in the audience being used as possibly the only leverage point that the FCC may have with the courts?
Uh-huh.
It seems that if they don't have that argument, what other argument could they possibly use to justify curtailing free speech?
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's if it wasn't for kids, there wouldn't be any problem at all, I guess. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hi, Sandra Gorfka.
It's a kid. Oh, no. You're not supposed to be listening to... Are you supervised?
What?
Are you supervised? Right now, are you supervised?
This is
a babysitter.
Okay, as long as this babysitter knows what you're listening to on the radio, we're okay.
She doesn't.
Uh-oh. We're dead.
One point for the FCC.
I think you are wrong about one thing.
Okay, what's that?
The kids... there is a band of kids listening to it from this time.
There's a band of kids?
Yeah.
Unsupervised kids?
Unsupervised kids listening to radio at odd hours of the night.
Well, that's a real scary thought, but is the way they approach it, is that considered fair to you?
What terms?
Well, to more or less censor whatever is put on the air just because someone 5 years old might find it offensive.
Well, I don't think that's not right either, because 5-year-olds probably don't listen to it. But anyway, uh-huh. Like 12-year-olds like me, some of these kids want to listen to it.
Uh-huh.
They like it. And see what those hokey pokey, those thick-headed bums were in court. They don't really know about 12-year-olds that much.
Uh-huh.
Because all they did when they were 12-year-olds was putting on their suit and ties and cleaning their eyeglasses.
When they were 12 years old?
What?
When they were 12 years old, they did that?
Maybe they weren't 12 years old, because they don't know how...
Yeah, well, they've lost sight. Yeah, I see what you're saying. They've lost sight of what it's like to be a 12-year-old. And I can't say for sure that I haven't lost sight of that myself, but I really think it's when you're so far separated from one particular group of people, it's really hard to believe how you can just make rules that are in their best interest constantly and know what you're talking about.
I mean, these guys must be like 40, 30. I don't know what it's like to be that, just as much as they don't know what it's like to be 12-year-olds, even though they have been.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you can forget quite a bit. That's certainly true.
Yeah, but see, there are kids who listen to it, and they don't take it offensive. They like it. They think it's fun to do this. I'm not talking to them.
Uh-huh.
Andrew, can I ask you a question? Can you generalize as to what type of programming these kids listen to? Do they generally listen to, like, commercial, like, rock and roll stations? Do they listen to stations like USB or BAI, for instance, and hear in more informational-type programming?
Me?
No, well, these like, your friends, like, it's, for instance, or your peers at school, do you think that they're interested in listening to stations like USB and other non-commercial stations?
Some. Usually most of them go on, like, BLI.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, you know, they're going to listen to stations like that. They're not going to have to worry about anything. It's just a music box.
Yeah.
You know, that's really the purpose.
So you're not saying that they're turning on their radio, searching the dial in the middle of the night just to hear an errant curse over the air. They're not looking for the thrill of hearing curse words, are they?
They're searching the dial for, like, new and interesting ways.
That's what life's all about.
I've got a lot of kids liking this show. And too embarrassed to call in, but a lot of them like it, and I got around 10 kids from camp,
uh-huh.
And around 5 kids here.
Uh-huh. Well, that's good. You got 5 kids there now, or just around the island listening at this moment?
15 total.
Well, that's good. Now, is everyone else too embarrassed to call? What's going on here? We don't have any more calls. 632-6901. This is a very important topic, because it directly affects the way non-commercial radio sounds, and we are a non-commercial radio, and we have to follow the rules. We have to follow what the FCC says, and what the FCC has been saying in past months, past years, has been very disturbing and ominous. We didn't know what the future was going to hold. This is a positive step, but...
And Eric, an aspect of this case...
What I'm saying is that if you don't want to hear this or see some pornographical thing, then don't look at it. Don't listen to it. Change the dial.
Uh-huh.
There you go, Andrew.
Focus your eyes somewhere else.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, thanks very much for calling.
Okay, bye.
All right, what did you have to say, Rob?
I was going to say, there goes my mic, that a pretty obvious aspect of this case that also oughtn't to get overlooked is the fact that there would have been no ruling by a federal appeals court if this wasn't brought to court by the plaintiffs in the case, which were the broadcasting networks, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, this thing is being fought out in the courts, and if nobody did anything, the FCC would just be, you know, whiling away its time making regulations as it saw fit. And it's only through opposition to those regulations that any kind of, you know, fight and results are coming about.
Now, you know what gets me? It's, you know, we say we have a Constitution, we have the First Amendment and all that kind of thing, but something like this happens, and you have to fight it, and you have to spend all this money just to get some court to say, like it said today or yesterday, that yes, indeed, the First Amendment applies here.
Yeah.
Okay, now we know that. These groups have spent millions of dollars to prove that point. They're not getting that back. That's not part of the agreement. They just get the satisfaction knowing that the First Amendment will protect them in the future. So
it's a battle that has to be fought constantly.
Yeah, I mean, the revolution, the American Revolution still seems to be in the fighting process. We still have to prove what the First Amendment is over and over again. I guess that's good, because otherwise we'd
have nothing to talk about.
We'd have nothing to talk about, too.
But that's why it's so important that, you know, Brain Damage and other shows address this matter, because it does make a difference.
Uh-huh.
And especially to acquaint someone like Andrew with these issues at his young age, you know, him and his friends, I think it's public service to them.
Uh-huh.
We're creating better citizens, and I don't say that, you know, it sounds like a cliche, but I really feel it. I mean, when I was 12 years old, I don't think I, you know, knew what an FCC was or what a constitution was, maybe.
Yeah, well, you have to be aware of what's going on, you know, where things are, what this means, how it applies to other things, and that's very important. So, I guess we'll go into the Jello Biafra record side, and we can take some more calls later on, perhaps talk to the folks in California, if we can raise them. We're trying to get a hold of them, but
their light is still blinking.
Yeah, you know how they are in California. It's summertime out there too, and they're doing other things, and they're probably out getting drunk right now because they're very happy about this. So if we hear from them, it'll be a little bit later on. We're going to go now to Jello Biafra, who, in case you didn't know, was the lead singer for the Dead Kennedys before they broke up as a result of being raided by different law enforcement authorities and charged with promoting obscenity by distributing record albums, a case that was later dropped. We're going to hear a talk on censorship and a letter to Tipper Gore of the Parents Music Resource Center. That's another one of those things that we talk about quite often here on Brain Damage, the group that wants to regulate rock music, put ratings on the albums, that kind of thing. So let's let Jello get into it, and we'll take your calls later on.
Want to talk about censorship?
Yeah.
Can't do that. Been censored. We have a blitz on right now, open season on underground and dissident culture in all fronts. We have Mr. Ed Meese and his Inquisition sending an under-the-table blackmail letter to 7-Eleven and other convenience stores, if you recall, saying, take Playboy and Penthouse off your shelves or you will write you up as peddlers of pornography. Sure enough, Fear Factor worked. Chill Factor took them off the shelves. Less than a month later, do you have Walmarts here? Walmart convenience stores? Guess what they took off the shelves? Rolling Stone, Spin, Cream, and even Tiger Beat, on the grounds that these rock music publications were pornographic. And guess who ordered them to do it? Not Ed Meese, but Jimmy Swaggart. Where did a TV evangelist get so much power? This is the problem. When you start trying to shut people up, you open this Pandora's box where something as innocent on the surface as a few uptight Washington senators' wives then gives Jimmy Swaggart front page respectability when he says all rock music is pornography. And sure enough, enough dominoes fall that now we're starting to have real victims. KPFK in Los Angeles, muckraking news station, naughty word on the air, FCC decides they should go off the air. In Dallas, after a lot of pressure, a really cool underground radio station played a lot of good stuff, had their license taken away and then handed to a group from the religious right, as if Dallas didn't have enough evangelist stations already. That's what we see happening here, and now, in case you haven't heard, me and four other people are looking at a year in jail $2,000 fine, and at least a six-week show trial coming up as early as late July over what was said with a dead Kennedy's record album. The city attorney's office in Los Angeles trumpeted these charges to the media the day before Election Day. In other words, they didn't pick Prince or Ozzy or any of the people they really want to nail. They picked somebody independent like ourselves who puts out our own records and doesn't play by the entertainment industry's rules and put airbrushed photos of our ugly face on the cover and, you know, use the standard government music ruse of like, well, you know, government music, you're only really allowed to sing about a certain set amount of things if you're going to be on a big record company. You're going to use love as a carrot on a stick. You know, everything's just going to be wonderful. Suddenly you fall in love. Or wouldn't it be great and all your problems solved if you were rich? That's another one. Or for them young people who want to let off that energy, give them a safe cathartic ritual that goes nowhere, like sexist and even racist heavy metal. So people who don't play by those rules become the first targets. And so what we've been trying to do is we formed what's called the No More Censorship Defense Fund, which some of you have little newspapers there from it. You can get information that makes my short story long. You'll get a little cameo appearance by Mel and Norma Gabler of Dallas, Texas, who say that math books should be altered in our school system because when a student learns there are no absolutes, sooner or later he turns to crime and drugs. Guess who funds these people? Jerry Falwell. And guess where most school textbooks are made that go all over the country? Dallas. Maybe that's why elementary, junior high, high school textbooks have next to no mention of evolution anymore. Meanwhile, in Tennessee, did you hear about the case not far from where they had the Scopes monkey trial in Tennessee, where they ruled in favor of this group of fundamentalist Christian parents who said that The Wizard of Oz was too occult for their kid and should be taken off the shelf. Any book mentioning the Catholic Church could confuse their innocent young mind. Off the shelves it goes. Then in Alabama, a judge rules something like 118 textbooks can't be used in schools because they violate freedom of religion by not mentioning it enough for his liking. Calls it secular humanism. Guess who funded that one? Pat Robertson. And the way they sneak this into the mainstream, get it so these people get to go on TV talk shows about, oh, what about our children, is they go under the ruse of concerned parents. And nowhere is child rearing in more danger from so-called concerned parents than it is from a group of wives of right-wing congressmen, mostly Democrats, in D.C. called the Parents Music Resource Center, the PMRC. They're the ones who somehow managed to pussy-whip their husbands into holding hearings in Congress that one of them modestly called the most widely publicized media event in congressional history, saying that there's porn rock, there's occult music, we've got to get rid of it all, and the way we're going to get rid of it and bypass constitutional law so no one sues is to pressure the record companies to do it themselves in the form of a rating system, just like movies. But this one would go further. What they were asking for was the records could be have a warning sticker slapped on them for V for violent, O for occult. Who's going to define what occult is? How about Back in Control? Back in Control Training Center, who says the Star of David is a satanic symbol, and yet they're thanked in the back of PMRC founder Tipper Gore's book. This is where these people are coming from. Oh, for a cult. If that isn't obvious enough that these people, maybe they are a front for the religious right, if they're not their dupes, They also sent a guy to talk to Congress about wicked rock lyrics who neglected to tell the senators that he was the Reverend Jeff Ling. He says, oh yeah, I think these records should be taken completely off the shelves, and I think labeling will do that. And sure enough, it does. Some of these chain stores you see in smaller towns that are like the only record outlet in town, they're located in chain shopping malls. The malls themselves are chains. And the owners of those chain shopping malls have been sending down memos saying they will evict any store that sells any record with any warning sticker on it whatsoever. Some of these stores are located nowhere but in chain shopping malls. So their choice is blackball some heavy metal, blackball Dead Kennedys, or you can lose your lease, Jack, and go out of business. That's what this means, is behind the scenes blackballing that would never hold up in a court of law. Now, for round two, the PMRC, after going quiet for a while, they have a new media blitz coming on, right at the same time the FCC pops the radio stations, right at the same time the Immigration and Naturalization Service says that people like the Pet Shop Boys are too dangerous to come into the country. People like Hortensia Allende, whose husband Salvador was murdered by the CIA so their guy could take over Chile, she's not allowed to come and speak in this country. Nobel Prize winning author Gabriel Garcia Marquez is barred from entering this country. This is what we've got right now. We've got a blitz. And right now at the front of the blitz is a new alliance between the PMRC and the American Academy of Pediatrics. Children's doctors. You take your little kid into the doctor, there's going to be PMRC literature in the office. They're also allied with the PTA, whose head, Ann Kahn, encourages all 24,000 local chapters to show the PMRC slideshow prepared by the so-called research, a term I use loosely, by Reverend Jeff Ling. Not only that, but if you're going to have a PMRC parent saying, don't talk to your kids, let this book tell you how to raise your kids, if you're going to rely on them to decide how to raise your own kids, how can you trust somebody who won't even reveal their financial backers? Bits and pieces have come out here and there, widespread allegation that Coors beer money got them started initially and helped pay their rent. Merrill Lynch is bullish on the PMRC. Occidental Corporation. One guy from the Washington, D.C. 7-Up Bottling Company was thanked at their annual pig-picking fundraising barbecue. This book was announced as imminent in January, but it was held off until the author's husband, Senator Albert Gore Jr., announced his candidacy for president. Right as Tipper, his wife, is on TV talk shows hawking the book and keeping the name Gore in the public eye. And with Gary Hart out of the picture for getting laid in front of the Miami Herald, we might have a PMRC wife in First Lady. If you think Nancy Reagan and her drug winch hunt is bad enough, wait till you get this. Not only that, but another candidate is married to a PMRC creature. That's Senator Paul Simon from Illinois. Another one. So what we have here is their new, more carefully disguised, moderate approach, Raising PG Kids in an X-Rated Society by Tipper Gore. Clever title. She gets the reader to assume that we're already in a PG society, or an X-rated society. Even here it says explicit material, parental advisory, which again seems like a harmless warning to put on records until you have to decide who decides what to put on what record. That happened. What they're going to do is what they already did to the Beastie Boys on License to Ill. Called them in and said, we don't want a warning sticker. You've got to take this song off and rewrite this one. And the Beastie Boys did it. That's what we're seeing now, behind the scenes. Just like with films. Do you know how they rate films in this country? How many of you know that the committee that rates all of our movies, R, X, PG, whatever, is totally secret? Their identities are unknown to producers except to the head of the Motion Picture Association, Jack Valenti. Otherwise, even these big wheels, the producers, Canon Pictures, everybody, they got to shove the film under the door to this committee, who then sends it back X or whatever. And so they have to guess at what to cut out of the movie and then send it back X. Cut out some more. And you have to guess as to what they want cut out, because you don't get to hold this committee up to any kind of accountability, because they've bypassed constitutional law and they just have a secret inquisition. So what we get now is the director and producer's version of the movie goes out in Europe, and a watered-down, doctored version comes out in this country. This is what they want with records, basically. Same old ruse. Concerned parents said, oh, let's see, dead Kennedys is a Trojan horse rolling explicit violence into our home. That's what gets you. That's how they sell these things. They say, we're just concerned parents. We don't want to censor. What about our children? Guess what charge they picked to charge me and the other people in Los Angeles? Distribution of harmful matter to minors. I mean, I wake up one morning and find that the window by my front door has been busted and there's 9 cops tearing my house apart. 3 from L.A. and 6 from San Francisco. All to get one guy over wicked artwork. Anyway, one's going through my phone book, another finds a Butthole Surfer's 12-inch in the kitchen. Are you involved with them, too? I mean, how many 45-year-old LAPD cops know who the Butthole Surfers are? They either have hip kids, which I tend to doubt, or they're stalking the underground. Another one came in with a slightly glazed look on his face after seeing milk carton remnants in one part of the house. And what are all those pictures of missing children doing on your kitchen wall? Do you know where they are? He later appeared on television news in San Francisco dressed in a Hawaiian shirt and shorts, saying that they needed 9 policemen to tear my house apart because it was a cooperative measure, commonplace among the police. What about our children? What they say is harmful to children is actually a painting by Swiss surrealist artist H.R. Giger, which is been displayed in galleries in America. It's in a book called 20th Century Masters of Erotic Art. You can get in many public libraries and campus libraries. But oh no, harmful to minors. So we get to be the guinea pigs. So the PMRC and this city attorney can get their name in the paper. What about our children? Tipper Gore has become so persuasive. I mean, she's actually very nice when you meet her and stuff, you know, just convert anybody there. She wrote a letter to Cream a while back. I love music. I particularly love rock and roll. The normal sex and sensuality of rock and roll is not my beef. I don't like to see them take good old rock and roll too far. The dead Kennedys don't really have to bring it to 11-year-olds, do they? Well, they're going to get a fight bringing it to mine. And that doesn't mean I'm an uptight prude who wants to ban rock. I grew up on rock, just like millions of my generation. But consumers and parents have rights, too. I want my children to enjoy the best that rock has to offer, or else. I resent the fact that some artists and record companies cynically abuse their power over the young kids to blatantly commercialize brutality and explicit sexual references, complete with moans and groans. It particularly fosters a degrading attitude towards women. That I can agree with. But what she uses that to say is, these torture rock artists, have introduced it in lyrics, visuals, live performances. These artists are guilty of smearing rock. Even liberals are beginning to get upset. Not the responsible rockers and music lovers who are also parents and feel responsible for the nurturing of children. These are demographic facts. But everyone can do their own thing. So let's keep the hardcore stuff away from the kids. The industry should help. This will enhance individual freedom of choice. And by the way, I never use hairspray. I prefer to be natural. And thanks. So I wrote her back. Dear Tipper Gore, PMRC and Cream readers, on the surface, your letter justifying your campaign to censor rock was surprisingly convincing. I'd almost be ready to fall for your concerned mommy act if it weren't for what your group says they really have in mind. I mean, guess who publishes Tipper's book here? This is the wholesale catalog from Abingdon Press, located in Nashville, Tennessee. Page one, you have Tipper's book. Page two, Tipper's book again. Then we get Evangelicals in America. Who they are, what they believe. Guess what the slogan is of Abingdon Press? America's first name in religious publishing. This person's husband is running as a liberal for president, keep in mind. Other titles include Spiritual Harvest, The Birth of God. Oh, here we are. Sacred Chow, the ultimate guide to potluck dinners. Another title we have here is Jesus Never Said Everyone Was Lovable. And every other title in this catalog is directly for the religious market except one book, which on the surface doesn't appear to be. Anyway, where were we? The PMRC doesn't want to censor. Why do its own handouts call for, this is a quote now, reassessment of contracts of artists who do things on stage the PMRC doesn't happen to approve of? This isn't just censorship, ma'am. It's blackballing. Who defines what a cult is when records get raided? Tipper Gore or Jimmy Swaggart? Your witch hunt has now damaged the lives of real victims. Me and four other people now face up to a year in jail and a $2,000 fine over what dead Kennedys say with their records. Item, the record store that sold the record to the kid in my court case was not charged. City attorney says, well, they were cooperative and took dead Kennedys off the shelves. Not just the Frankenchrist album that got charged. They took everything we ever made off all of their shelves and never brought it back again. That sound like blackballing, chilling effect? The climate you and Mr. Ed helped create made it lucrative for these charges to be filed in Los Angeles the day before Election Day. The L.A. City Attorney's Office says they picked us to prosecute because it was, quote, cost-effective, unquote. In other words, we are under arrest because we run our own record company, or therefore the easiest to bankrupt. I do agree that too much of today's music does blatantly commercialize brutality and fosters a degrading attitude towards women. That's funny. So does Rambo. So does almost everything on primetime TV, especially the commercials. But let's face it. Motley Crue and Judas Priest are just our generation's Bing Crosby and Bob Hope. Skilled vaudeville comedians who know how to play it safe to make a buck. Sure, they're corny. But does that mean they should be censored? I mean, who encourages more kids to wind up dead? Ozzy Osbourne or military recruiting ads? And why? Why is country western spared from your war on words? I've heard lots of whiskey-drenched honky-tonk tunes that glorify people with guns that beat their wives. Or is country protected because your husband's a senator from Tennessee and must respect the powers down in Nashville? Come on, do you really think taking away a kid's Prince and Ozzy records and substituting U2 and Phil Collins like the cassette Jeff Ling made for you says to do? Will that do anything to change the kid's taste besides making him even angrier at his parents? If I were a parent and my kid brought home something that I felt might be harmful to his emotional growth or whatever, like, say, Top Gun on video, or Sammy Hagar album, I wouldn't just hit the roof and grab the whole thing away. Would that teach the kid that what he bought might screw up his head? No. It would just reinforce the idea that Daddy just doesn't understand, and Daddy's mean, and Daddy's a fascist. He took my record away. What I would do is sit down with the kid and say, okay, you went out and bought this thing. Why? Tell me why you like it. Tell me what you see in it. What does it mean to you? What do you think they're trying to say? And now I'll tell you why I don't like it. It seems to me, Mrs. Gore, that rational communication and discussion is a far healthier way to help nurture a loving family. Your letter claims you are not an uptight prude who wants to ban rock, yet you keep trying to restrict our music to your own idea of normal sex and sensuality. I was born in the USA, too. I do not need a bouffant-encrusted thought police to tell me or any younger kids what they can listen to. Your fantasies of laws that wash our art out with soap would be a whole lot funnier if the PMRC had more money, less money and power. I would urge cream readers, people who love music, and you to keep an eye out for censorship going on in your area. Who's trying to shut down the radio stations and why? And oftentimes it'll be one crank who will get the ear of the FCC or the college president. Nobody shows up to give the other side. Somebody has to show up. After all, which consumer revolt really has more numbers? People who don't like music or people who do? I mean, what would happen if a bunch of letters came into CBS and Warner Brothers saying, I won't buy records with a warning sticker on them? Also, you know, you can go to various record stores saying, if you take certain records out, I will not buy anything else from your store ever again. At the very least, why give the PMRC sponsors your money? I know I won't be buying Coors beer for a long, long time. Don't have much desire to buy 7-Up or fly on American Airlines or put up with a bull from Merrill Lynch. And by the way, Mrs. Gore, I don't care if you use hairspray. The Constitution says you can do that, too.
Amen. That's Jello Biafra here in WUSB Stony Brook, but let's let him say it.
This is Jello Biafra of Dead Kennedys, and you're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook, 90.1 FM, unless your stereo was made in America.
Okay. Well, that's about enough from Jello there. Rob, are you there in the other studio?
Checkaroonie,
yeah, there he is. Okay, now, if our listeners would like to call up, if they're not, as Andrew said, too embarrassed to call us, give us a call now, 632-6901. Tell us what you think of all these censorship issues. And what I was thinking during the last part of that whole speech or dialogue there, where Jello was talking about record albums and how it's really up to the parents to more or less talk to the kids and say, well, why are you buying this garbage? What does it mean something to you? Instead of just having a blanket law that says this will not be allowed, I think that can be applied to radio, too, and to yesterday's ruling, which we'll get back into in a moment. Pretty much, you are allowed to listen to whatever you want to listen to, but the question of banning something, that's a much more serious issue, and one that we shouldn't be so eager to jump into. And that's what I saw happening with this whole FCC business.
It's a basic question of availability of materials, and you know, Jell-O mentioned it in terms of books on the shelves being censored and records. And not so much being censored by an act of law, uh-huh, by Congress, but by backroom tactics or by small self-regulatory moves by the record companies, such as labeling, which just basically work in such a way that they begin to filter things out of their system, that it's like almost like a little oyster, you know, becoming irritated, like, uh-huh, a record company that's a major major corporation. Such as the 8 record companies that control something like 85% of all the record business in this country,
uh-huh,
if they start getting irritated through, by some of their artists, if they start causing them public relations problems because album after album of theirs starts getting labeled with a O for a cult or a or whatever, they get bad press, that's the end of the artist. The labeling,
that's where it all lies, because when you label things, whether it's people or records or films or whatever, it's just so much easier to condemn the whole lot. You know, like
you don't have to listen to it anymore. There's a label on it.
Now, if a Dead Kennedys album or a Beastie Boys album is offensive, okay, it's offensive to some people. But if it's labeled O, it's labeled O to everybody. It's labeled O for you, for me, for our parents, for everybody. And it's so much easier to say down with all records that are labeled O for occult or X for obscene or something like that, rather than say, well, this record disenchants me because I don't like the way they say certain things. I don't like the words they use. It's your interpretation rather than a label that you're looking at that is there, that is a fact. And who determines that fact? A commission like Jell-O said that determines what the motion pictures are, a secret commission, you don't even know who they are. You can't appeal. You have to interpret what they say. It's scary. And I'd like to know more about the Motion Picture Association and how they rate films. And is it really true that you can't ever find out anything about why they made a film into an R film or why they made it into an X film, and you have to kind of guess and cut out scenes to get the right rating? It's kind of scary. It's very scary, in fact.
I was just wondering, as a side note there, they probably keep the identities of these people secret in order to keep them from being bribed. I would imagine that's at least one aspect of the rationale.
But
there,
why keep the reason,
right,
for why a film is
story
considered an X film?
Sure.
That's I can't understand that, and I guess this has been going on for decades now, but it's time we took a look at it. I don't know who would regulate that. That's not the FCC.
I don't think so. Not a motion picture. No, that's probably a self-imposed group for the film industry. It's something that they've taken upon themselves.
It's interesting that a watered-down version of films ends up in this country, and the Europeans see the real one. You know, it's like, what are we being protected from? We're Americans, so aren't we supposed to be able to handle this kind of thing? I don't know. It's interesting what it all leads to. I want to get back into the story that showed up in today's New York Times, also today's Newsday. I read the Times before. I'm going to read the shorter version that appeared in Newsday, and then hopefully we'll get some phone calls here. I don't know if the FCC has taken all of our listeners away, but our number is 632-6901. Tell us what you thought of Jell-O. Tell us what you think about censorship and the FCC, maybe WUSB in general, maybe Rob Franza and myself, Eric Corley in particular. Give us a call, 632-6901, area code 516. And if you get through, just let the phone ring, and we will pick you up as soon as we get to you. A U.S. Court of Appeals in Washington struck down yesterday the Federal Communication Commission's controversial rule that radio broadcasters may air indecent material only after midnight. The 3-judge panel unanimously overturned the agency's decision last year that allowed the broadcast of indecent material only between the hours of midnight and 6 o'clock in the morning in an effort to protect children. We agree that the FCC's midnight advice was not adequately thought through, Judge Ruth Bader Ginsburg said. We hold that the FCC failed to adduce evidence or cause. Adduce. Rob, do you know what that word means?
I guess to show
A-D-D-U-C-E.
Yeah, I didn't actually look it up. I'm not sure of the exact definition, but I think in that context it means that the FCC failed to show proper cause or evidence.
Okay.
Basically.
Okay, the FCC failed to adduce evidence or cause, particularly in view of the First Amendment, in parentheses, free speech, for those who don't know. The First Amendment interest involved sufficient to support its hours restraint, Ginsburg said. The ruling was a major victory for the broadcasting industry and a number of public interest groups which had filed suit challenging the FCC's rule. The industry was unsuccessful in asking the FCC to set the hour at 10 p.m. and to get more specific guidance on what constitutes indecency. The court overturned two warnings given by the FCC to the student-run radio station KCSB-FM in Santa Barbara, California, and to a Pacifica Foundation radio station in Los Angeles, KPFA, that broadcast a play about the sexual fantasies of homosexual men. Both broadcasts took place after 10 p.m., but before midnight. The appeals court let stand the FCC's warning to radio stations in New York, WXRK-FM, and Philadelphia, that feature outspoken disc jockey Howard Stern, whose talk show airs in the morning. According to the FCC, Stern dwelled on sexual and excretory matters in a way that was patently offensive and violated local community standards of decency for broadcasting. And in a way, I agree with them on that, because that guy certainly is offensive to me. The FCC defined as indecent language or material that depicts or describes in terms patently offensive as measured by contemporary community standards for the broadcast medium, sexual or excretory activities or organs. And I can practically say that in my sleep now. It's been said so many times, this definition of indecency. But what it boils down to is this. The time for airing indecent material seems to have been moved back to 10 p.m. from midnight, which means that technically this radio program could be indecent if it wanted to be. And I suppose one of the first things that we've seen as a result of this action is we were able to play Jello Biafra without having to go through delay, which is what we did last time we played Jello Biafra, because he does sometimes use a stray word that might be construed in a nasty kind of way. This time, however, a simple disclaimer will do, because it's after 10 p.m., and I think that's a lot more of a fair way of doing it. What do you think, Rob?
Well, like I said at the beginning, Eric, I'm still apprehensive about... I don't think this is a clear and unequivocal victory for, alternative broadcasting.
No, but we should be careful about that, because
yeah.
We can't let our guard down. We have to... I think the lobbying and the pressure that was put onto the various powers that be resulted in this rule. And if we hadn't done that, it might not have ever happened.
And I guess also court cases tend to be they turn on very technical issues, and it's great to see that on this particular point, us, the broadcasters, and you, the listeners, have won. And as more cases get brought before the courts, it seems as though, perhaps more ground will be gained. But I think that remains to be seen, and I'm still, myself and many other people, are probably upset by some of the things that are left dangling, some of the issues that are still left open by this ruling.
Okay, I want to get to the caller that's been waiting patiently, and also let's get some more calls in. We're not asking for money, we're not asking for anything, actually, just to hear your voice and hear what you have to say about all this and how it affects you as a listener, and how you think it will affect the sound of WUSB and other non-commercial radio stations, and other commercial stations, too, although it seems like the non-commercial stations are affected the most by these kind of rules. 632-6901, area code 516. Good evening. You are on Brain Damage.
Hi. I'm totally against censorship.
Well, that's good to hear.
I mean, I think it's the responsibility of the group and also the parents.
Uh-huh.
I don't think, I don't believe in putting labels on them saying, offensive lyrics and stuff.
Now, you say it's a responsibility of the group?
Yeah, the artist. I mean,
right.
They have to have a certain amount of, they have to, watch what they're doing, too.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you can't just, they have so much power, you can't just let things like that go.
But what do you do in the case of a group that is perhaps going over the line in some people's estimation? What do you do about that group?
Well, that's the parents.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the parents could come in. I mean...
Are you a parent?
Mm-hmm.
How would you deal with such a thing if you did have children? And your kid brought home, say, a Beastie Boys record or something that you didn't like. Would you take it away from him? Would you try to find out why he was listening to it? How would you handle it?
Probably ask why he was listening to it. I don't think I'd take it away. I'd probably discuss it,
Uh-huh.
suggest that it's, you know, I mean, I wouldn't take it away. I'd want to know why he got it, if he got it for that reason, because of the lyrics and stuff.
Uh-huh. So you believe it should be decided on an individual level rather than, say, all citizens must follow this rule?
Yes. I mean, I have the Dead Kennedys and stuff, and I mean, it all depends on your outlook on it. I don't think, I mean, yes, I mean, they curse and their topics are like, but it depends how you look at it.
Uh-huh.
And I also wanted to talk about pirate radios.
Okay.
There's a loophole in the FCC ruling on it. They won't issue a license to a station that's under a certain amount of, what's it called, watts?
Wattage, yeah.
Yeah, they won't license. So, I mean, if they won't give you a license, like, say, if you're under, I think it's 100 or something.
Uh-huh.
Well, if they're not going to give you a license, then they can't penalize you for not having one.
Well, that's true, but is that a new law?
No.
Because I seem to recall 10-watt radio stations that had licenses.
Really?
I used to remember that, but I could be wrong.
I thought it was that they wouldn't issue under 100.
Well, I'm not sure, but even if you're 5 watts and you're broadcasting on WNBC's frequency, don't you think you'd be violating some kind of law there?
Well, if pirates don't do that, they uh-huh. go for a blank channel.
Yeah, that's true. Well, are there many pirate radio stations on Long Island?
There's one right in Smithtown, yeah, that I listen to.
Uh-huh. And how powerful are they?
30 watts.
They're 30 watts? I see. What, as a pirate radio station, what do they play? What do they do things differently than...
Like, they're constantly changing formats and, you know, trying out new things, which, I mean, yeah, they play a lot of requests and stuff. It's just totally different from a regular station, because you can call in and you'll get through, and it's a lot better.
And you will make a difference. Well, now, how do you equate the difference between, say, pirate radio and a station like USB?
Well, I like college radio a lot better than commercial radio. It's closer to, you know, pirates.
Uh-huh.
That's why I like it better.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, if you know of any more interesting radio stations around, please let us know about them. We're always interested in that kind of thing.
I'd like to ask the caller just a quick question about the pirate station. Do they do any programming that you're aware of that we can't do because of the regulation that we're under from the FCC?
Well, you know, he tries not to do any of, you know, he won't play stuff like, you know, Dead Kennedys and stuff.
He won't?
No, he doesn't want to, you know.
Uh-huh.
Because, like, my parents might hear it in training.
Yeah.
In other words, he doesn't want his cover to get blown by causing too much controversy.
Yeah, he's using his own, you know.
Uh-huh. Well, okay, well, thanks so much for calling.
Okay.
632-6901. I remember that radio station that was broadcasting on a boat about a year ago. But thing is, they didn't sound very different from commercial radio. They didn't want to be controversial either. They didn't want to draw too much attention to themselves. But what good is it if you can't be controversial, you know?
They probably wanted to make money.
Yeah. That's what it's all about. 632-6901. Let's hear from some listeners. Area code 516. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hi. First of all, I'd like to congratulate you and your co-host on bringing this issue to the listening public.
Well, thanks very much for telling us that.
Well, thank you. Being a former station manager of a college alternative radio station, I was just wondering how management at USB is handling this FCC ruling.
Well, surprisingly well we've been handling it overall, you know, over the last few years. It's a bit early to say just exactly how yesterday's ruling is supposed to be interpreted. We have to see how other broadcast organizations are responding and what other station managers are saying. For the most part, I think it reflects what we've been saying tonight, that things seem to be a little bit more relaxed, a little bit more reasonable. The indecency hour has been moved back to 10 o'clock, which means if we have some kind of a disclaimer saying you may be offended by what you hear, words to that effect, legally, we're not causing any problems.
I found that when we asked our listenership upstate at the college station I worked for, basically they were unaware of all this jazz with the FCC and the PMRC.
Uh-huh.
And basically, they really didn't care. Our general college radio audience is above that child age level, and I don't think children in general tend to listen to college stations and alternative radio stations at that. That's all I wanted to say.
Well,
I totally agree with what you're saying, and I'm very glad to hear it.
I think for the most part, the listeners, your listeners are not the ones you have to worry about. You have to worry about people coming in, maybe who have their eye on your frequency, who say, well, let's monitor this radio station and complain to the FCC every time we hear something that could be construed as indecent in the wrong time period, every time they do something like miss a legal ID or who knows what. Let's get them for every little thing and make the FCC think that all these people are complaining, when in actuality it's a very well-organized group. There's always that possibility, and I think in most cases that's what's really happening.
I just remember one time, our basic rule after all this jazz with the PMRC came out was, you know, broadcast everything that would be termed indecent, after 12 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
So my shift was during the afternoon hours, and it did slip. And I was waiting for the calls, and it never happened.
Uh-huh.
And, just talking with management and with, basic general college radio listeners, it's not an issue that's brought up very often, and I'm just glad to hear this.
Yeah, it does. But what you will see, though, is you'll see an effect on the staff, because the staff will think that it is an issue among the listeners, and they'll be much more paranoid about things that really don't, at least in my opinion, make that much of a difference.
Right. What I'm trying to say is that, it's basically not an issue that is brought in the general public, and I'm very glad to hear that you're doing it tonight.
Okay, thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. 632-6901. But there are two ways this can affect us. It can affect the sound of what goes on over the airwaves. It can affect what happens internally inside the radio station. Either way, the people who are behind this deliberate attack have succeeded in undermining what non-commercial radio is all about.
Eric?
Yeah.
Also, somewhat importantly, it affects the sound of what doesn't go on the radio. That
oh, certainly.
Is, I think, what we're also
all the music,
troubled with.
All the music that is then censored. Someone comes up with a brilliant record, but it's got something that someone might find indecent, so it can only be heard at a certain time of the morning when almost no one can listen. And, yeah, that affects people a lot. 632-6901.
So many of us have lost those perfect segues.
Yeah. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hi. I was just wondering, it sounds all beautiful and wonderful that we should talk to our children about the records they're listening to and probably not permit them to listen to radio after 10, but I'm against censorship, but I kind of wonder, this is kind of a classist issue here to an extent. It's the white, middle-class, suburban child with a fairly good family background is able to benefit from possibly talking to parents about the albums they're listening to or what they're hearing on the air. But it seems to be a very few people who are able to do that. Can you comment on that a bit?
Now, you're saying that very few people can talk to their parents about the music they listen to.
That, and also a listener before said something like, well, she would talk, if she had children, she would talk to them about the albums they're listening to. And just like Jello Biafra said, he said, listen, why don't we sit down with our kids and ask them kind of why you bought this album. But what I wonder is does that happen? Can that happen? I'm against censorship, but there's not very much communication going on, and I think you won't find that in an inner city area or in an impoverished area, and I wonder who benefits from this.
Well, now, it's usually the parent that is more concerned about the music than the child. The child won't run to a parent and say, hey, this music is trying to hurt me, please talk to me about it before I get corrupted or something. It's the parent that's going to say, hey, this music is going to corrupt my child. So if the parent cares enough to say that, then the parent obviously will seek out the child and try to talk to them, I would assume.
But obviously, suddenly, a majority of heavy metal music, which is anti-women, which is extremely violent and condones violence, is listened to by many, many young children.
Uh-huh.
And subliminally, and they get these messages that violence is okay. anti-women is fine, racism is fine. They get these messages that no one is talking to them about, and it just sort of goes on.
So why do you think they would start listening to it then?
Why would they listen to it?
Yeah, why would they start listening to this kind of music?
Hey, I don't know. Their peers listen to it. It's the cool thing to do.
So perhaps some kind of a peer group, a school group or something, or some kind of counseling service that if parents failed in their responsibilities, they would... I mean, you can't really replace parents, you know. If the parents aren't there, yes, there is going to be some kind of harm to the child as a result.
That's why I'm definitely against censorship, but I'm concerned... where the lines of communication are going to open up? Is it going to be in school? Where are we going to get people
talking about this? It should be wherever the child goes. There should be some way of communicating, whether it be with their peers, with their teachers, with their parents. And obviously there are going to be gaps. Occasionally a child won't be able to talk to their parents, but they could just as easily be victimized by anything else, any other form of indecency they might come across that's not music-related. It could be a film they happen to see on TV. Who's going to stop that? Who's going to stop them walking into a theater and seeing a film or hearing bad language on the street? You know, obviously, it's not just music. Music can't do it alone. Radio stations can't do it alone.
I was not saying that, but I was just... it all sounds so beautiful and wonderful, Jello Biafra and other people saying, listen, let's talk to the kids about what they're seeing, what they're listening to.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not sure if it's all that wonderful and perfect. Hey, I don't want to censor anybody, that's for sure.
But isn't it just as wonderful and perfect to say, let's label everything?
Absolutely not.
It's the same sort of idealistic way of looking at things, saying that, if we simply label everything, the problem will solve itself then.
Sure. I mean...
There's no one way to do it. You have to approach it on an individual basis. And I think what Jello was saying was... that's one way of doing it. Everyone has their own rules. Some kids will talk to their parents, some kids will talk to their grandparents, some kids will talk to their siblings. But it has to be done on an individual basis, not governmentally.
No, I absolutely agree, but not sure if I do agree wholly with individuals saying, well, it'll all be fine and wonderful because you can just communicate and open things up. This doesn't work that easily.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
But I definitely, you know, agree with Jello Biafra on everything else, you know. And also, I mean, we see this is a major problem because we see the FCC rulings. They're so ambiguous; you can't even define them or describe them. No one knows what the hell's going on.
Well, I don't think they do either, and that's probably why they're so ambiguous, because they don't want to say something that will be obviously stupid.
Exactly. So it's really it's a tough situation all around. Well, thanks for airing this. It's really something that
thanks for calling.
Okay, take care.
632-6901. Rob, any comments?
Well, I think that listener, you know, is very correct in saying there's no easy answer to this problem. I mean, in many ways, we live in a very sick society, and music reflects that to a certain extent. And, I mean, look. Violence and other spheres of this society. I mean, it's not something that can be easily tied up in a package and made to go away. And we have some very difficult issues to grapple with. And perhaps the music just points to deeper levels of structures in the society that need to be dealt with. The music may just be a symptom, the violence that's expressed in heavy metal.
Yeah, I think that's it. Because if people are listening to music that says sick things... It's not, the music isn't what's doing it, it's the people behind the music that are saying these sick things.
And the,
why are they saying?
The mega corporations that are pushing this stuff and promoting it, you know, out the gazoo. I mean, why aren't they promoting something like Bruce Coburn, you know?
Uh-huh.
There's probably a very definite reason for that.
Uh-huh.
You know,
but when you say mega corporations, you know, I think that sort of just throws a lot of people the wrong direction. They say, oh, you know, that's socialist talk or something. I don't know.
Well, but I think it's a very clearly established fact, and what I mentioned before, the statistic,
right.
I think there's 8 record companies that control 85% of the music industry in this country, records, tapes, CDs, you know, Warner Brothers and whoever else the rest of them are. You've heard of them before, you know, CBS, Warner Brothers, A&M, whatever they are, those 8 record companies control a vast majority of what... gets done in the entertainment world in terms of music, and that means
in terms of everything, in terms of films too.
I mean, all you have to do is go to Sam Goody and see, you know, look on the labels and the records. I don't, you know, want to single out Sam Goody, but a large franchise record store. Look at the labels and see the same names reoccur over and over and over and over and over again.
That's why independent labels are really a healthy way to go. And they're the ones, I mean, Jello Biafra was on an independent label, and look what happened to him. 632-6901, area code 516. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Am I on?
Looks like it, yes.
Just Jimmy Doomsayer tonight.
How you doing?
Hey, Jim.
I don't even know what the subject is. We have WBAB tuned in over here.
Oh,
can
my
I say
God.
That over the air?
Yes, you can say that over the air, and I guess in a way you are tuned into the subject.
What is the subject? Oh, you're kidding.
Well, the subject is why people listen to stupid radio stations. No, actually, that's
they
not...
They don't know better.
The subject is censorship and this new FCC ruling that came yesterday that pushes back the indecent hour to 10 o'clock. Actually, I'm wrong. It was not an FCC ruling. It was a U.S. Court of Appeals ruling that overturned the FCC rule that said you can only air indecent material after midnight. Now it appears... Although we're not 100% certain on this, it appears that you can air indecent material from 10 o'clock until 6 o'clock in the morning.
In other words,
it's a step forward.
Television can show bare breasts on TV now?
Are bare breasts considered obscene or indecent? See, I don't know. Those are the kind of questions we have to grapple with.
I was watching TV the other night. I usually watch public television, you know.
Uh-huh.
That's not going to get me mixed up with commercialism here, but... I saw somebody getting their head blown away, and I thought that was pretty obscene.
Uh-huh. Well, that is obscene, whether it's in real life or on film.
I think I would have felt a lot better had I seen a woman being made love to in a nice way.
Uh-huh.
See somebody's head getting blown off. I don't know why.
Well,
society finds
for some reason, violence doesn't get it as much as sex does, and I don't know how anyone can equate a bare breast to the scenes of violence that you can see any night on TV. I mean, I was watching a film on Channel 11 the other night, and it was just, you know, these people were doing something. They were trying to blow up a bank truck, you know, transporting money or something like that, and it was really horrible. The violent things. I saw another one I forget when it was on. People were on this ski lift, and they were just pushing each other off it every now and then, and it was just so horrible.
Yeah.
When you think of the kind of people that would watch something like that and the thoughts that would go through their minds after seeing something like that. I mean, I don't want to prevent people from seeing films, but when you see them all the time like that, you have to ask yourself, why are these things on? And
well, people are mindless, you know that. Look at the
That's not true. No, that's not people are encouraged not to use their minds. I don't think people are mindless at all. I think you'll find a heck of a lot of thought in the average person, a lot of depth that is not encouraged to come out by society in general.
Well, look at that beautiful program they have that on USB and PKN, that thing they're airing, the Dreams of Rio tapes that I bought. That's that's unbelievable. That's unbelievable entertainment.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think I could get too many people interested in that because they just... You got to sit down and you have to listen to it, but when you get into it, it's unbelievable. That's really excellent entertainment. I don't know if you've been following it or not.
Well, I think if you can succeed in getting into something that most people around you aren't getting into, then you're getting somewhere.
Well, the thing
no matter
is,
what it is.
But with that story, that Dreams Are Real, I don't know if you've been following, but the thing is with that story, there's a message in there about how we're wrecking the tropical rainforest at an alarming rate. And as you know, the tropical rainforests are considered the lungs of the earth. And there's a lot of innuendos in that story about how the Christians corrupted, you know, certain Indian tribes with their culture. And there's a lot of lost cultures now because of religion, you know, how religion tries to rule other people.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of that in that story. And some of it actually may sound funny, but if you laugh at it, it'll be a pathetic kind of laugh, if you know what I mean.
Cynical, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's good if it's making you think. And so many things, when you watch something on TV, when you hear something on the radio, ask yourself, is this making me actually think, or is it just making me sort of get through the drudgery of a day by humming a nice tune to myself? Those people who listen to various radio stations, we know what they are. I mean, there's only two radio stations people seem to listen to in offices.
Yeah.
Do you listen to what they're saying? Do you ever listen to what they are saying, or do you just have this strange little beat on in the background?
It's more of a sedative.
It's a drug. It's not radio. This is radio where we talk and people talk back and listen and converse.
You say that. I would have to say that public television is public radio is equal.
I mean, Muzak is considered a way to maximize consumer, consumer activity, or to maximize employee productivity. That's the way that that stuff is conceived of. It's to make people act more robotish and less human. I mean, that's exactly the idea behind it.
Robots don't cause much trouble, you know.
Yeah.
At least not yet. All right, thanks for calling, sir.
Yeah, I'll see you, Eric. Have a good night, okay?
Okay, you too. 632-6901, area code 516. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hi.
Hi.
I tend to look at the whole censorship issue myself as something larger. It seems that, you know, the government likes to protect us from things, whether we want them to or not. And they like to take decisions away from us and make them for us.
Uh-huh.
You know, even it could extend to seatbelt laws.
I knew you were going to say
you're not smart enough to do it yourself.
I knew you were going to say that. Now, would you equate this whole thing with seatbelts and censorship? Is that more or less the same kind of thing?
From one end, yeah. The government likes to protect us. You know, it's nice motive on their part. You know, to help protect the people. But certain things, I think we have to make the decisions ourselves. And when people start getting used to the government making the decision for them, then they don't want to make the decision for themselves anymore. And in fact, they become lazy.
Uh-huh.
And they expect the government to make decisions for them. In terms of censorship, you know, if you don't want to pay attention to what your kids are listening to, and you expect the government to do it for you, then you're going to get lazy and not pay attention to what they're learning in school. Or anything else. I was teaching at one time, and I was surprised to see how little the parents knew what was going on in the school, what they were learning. And in fact, I found it appalling in a way.
Uh-huh. Well, I think what you say is very true. If a law doesn't exist, we might not think that it's... with the seatbelts, for instance, if there wasn't a seatbelt law, maybe more people would be encouraged to make up their own minds. I personally think you're crazy if you don't wear a seatbelt. That's my personal opinion, and I think it's...
I agree with you,
but... as close to fact as possible, but when you make it a law, then people aren't really encouraged to think for themselves. They just obey the law. They don't know why they're obeying the law. You've made a good point there, I think.
Right. And in terms of motion picture rating, I think that in one way has become unfortunate. That wasn't meant to label motion pictures as much as a guide as to what you could expect.
Uh-huh.
You know, you don't want to not know what's in a film. Bring your kids and sit to see something, and you know somebody's giving somebody head or something.
Uh-huh.
It's unfortunate that the X rating has become equated with pornography, where you know a lot of good films have come out and there's no pornography in it at all, and they get an X rating because maybe excessive violence or something.
Uh-huh. Although I think there should be a rating for excessive violence because we see it.
I've heard that they would like to have another letter rating, an M, for mature audiences.
Well, they used to have that, didn't they?
I don't remember seeing anything like that.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember if it was Siskel and Ebert one time I was watching. They were going through this whole thing where automatically an X rating is box office poison.
Right, I remember that.
And so now it's become an economic thing where they'll try and cut a movie down from an X to an R. And it's not so much that they're, you know, doing it for artistic reasons or anything. It'll go out to Europe maybe without any rating at all, and they'll see the X version, and they'll make just as much money, but over here they can't because...
Uh-huh.
Somebody sees an X and they automatically think it's pornography.
Do they have ratings in other in Europe, for instance?
Not aware of that. I can't say.
Uh-huh. I do know.
I know a lot of the European films, when they come over here, they're not rated at all.
Uh-huh.
And another interesting point is nobody is compelling directors to put their movies through the rating system. They can release them not rated if they want to.
Oh, they can?
Yeah.
That I didn't know.
In fact,
well, that's good then, but no one does that.
I saw, what was it, Pink Flamingos recently,
uh-huh.
Which is one of the most disgusting films I've ever seen personally, but it was not rated.
Uh-huh.
I think if that had been put through the rating system, it would come out with an X.
So that's legal to come out with a film that has no rating?
Oh, yeah.
So why is it most directors don't choose to do that?
Maybe just so, box office, they'll know what to expect.
Uh-huh.
Parents want to know, kids want to know, if a movie's got an R, a kid's going to want to see it more than if it's a G rating.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
You know, how many people want to go see a G film anymore?
Yeah, that's true.
Just because it's got a G on it.
Okay, well, thanks for calling. Where are you calling from, sir?
Calling from Connecticut.
Okay, great.
And one other point I wanted to make.
Yeah, go ahead.
I used to belong to a college radio station out on Long Island, and when we first started, we had 10 watts of power,
uh-huh.
and we did have to have a license.
Yeah, I seem to recall that being a law of some sort, so I don't know if it's...
And the FCC has been loosening things up a lot.
Uh-huh.
When I first got my license to be a disc jockey, I had to take a test.
Yeah, I remember that too.
Yeah, now anybody can send in and be a third-class radio operator.
Just send in a postcard or something. And
yeah, that's it.
Yeah, those rules have changed.
Yeah.
I don't think the licensing rule is one of them.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks so much for calling.
Hey, thank you.
Bye-bye. Rob, you had a point.
Oh, no, I just wanted to mention that there is a Canadian film censorship board that's rather infamous in its use of censorship in Canadian films. I don't know too much about them, but I'm sure that there are some type of self-regulating boards around the world.
Uh-huh.
Or at least countries with major film industries. But I don't know if there is, if it presents as much of a problem as the American system does.
Uh-huh. Okay, 632-6901, area code 516, if you're calling from Connecticut or another state, perhaps. 632-6901. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hi.
Hi.
About censorship.
Yeah.
I'm definitely against it.
Uh-huh.
And, well, for one thing, I think that the government, or whoever does it, can mess up a lot of time.
Yeah.
For instance, today, a friend of mine, and we saw the movie Cocktail.
Which film?
Cocktail.
What's that about?
It's with, what's his face? Tom Cruise, and he's like a bartender.
Okay.
And it was given an R rating.
Uh-huh.
The movie was, there was nothing in it.
Yeah.
I mean, and Top Gun had a lot more stuff in it than this one, and that was given a PG rating.
Well, you know, I hear, and I don't know if this is true, but I hear some directors, Woody Allen included, like to get the R rating instead of a PG rating because they get more people to go to the film that way.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
I don't know how they're able to do it if there's no substance that requires an R rating, but that's an interesting point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they can mess up. They can, and when they do mess up, when they make a mistake, it affects everybody, and it's you know, literally a one letter mistake. Not a typographical error, but just a judgment error, and it's something we all have to live with. And I don't know what I'm advocating here. I don't know if I'm saying let's get rid of the Motion Picture Association or what, but I'm just saying let's not get into rating everything by letters. It'll be a dangerous trend if we start rating books and records and,
right.
and who knows what else.
And it's stupid.
Uh-huh. It's stupid, and it's also unnecessary. We're perfectly capable of doing this ourselves. And I think, as the caller from Connecticut pointed out, the more we have regulations, the less we're encouraged to think about thinking ourselves.
That's true.
Now, where are you calling from, sir?
Smithtown.
Smithtown. Okay, well, thanks so much for calling us.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. 632-6901 is our telephone number, area code 516. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Yeah, I'm over near Smithtown.
I know your voice. Go ahead.
Yeah. And you're talking about censorship on the radio.
I certainly am.
Yeah. You talk about that a lot, Eric.
Well, yes, it's a current issue. It's something that always rears its ugly head around here.
Oh, I've seen ugly heads in my day. Let me tell you something about censorship.
Go ahead.
Now, censorship, everybody promotes some kind of censorship because they don't want someone else to know something, or they themselves don't want to hear it.
Uh-huh. That's what it all boils down to.
Right, but that's like I'm not. It's not that I'm for censorship or against it, but on the radio you can't have all kinds of things, any kind of thing. That it just wouldn't be right, and it is right and wrong.
What you can have or you can't have.
The Constitution of the United States does not say anything about right or wrong, but there is such a thing as right or wrong, and that's what you have to think about first. Otherwise, you're a troublemaker.
Well, right or wrong for everyone at the same time, or right or wrong for each individual person? You see, that's the question.
Right,
is there one right and one wrong, and we can just say, well, this is right and this is wrong, or do we all make up our own minds?
Well, let me tell you, Francis Bacon said that the individual of a society had no right to force upon society an idea that he has in himself had that society does not deem current to that society. And I agree with Mr. Francis Bacon.
Uh-huh.
I don't know who Francis Bacon was, but I'm reading a book about Francis Bacon. And that's what he said. He says, no one has a right to push their ideas on someone else's feet. And I agree with the man. I wouldn't push myself on anybody's feet. And if you're in Rome, do like the Romans do.
Yeah, that makes sense. But
and not to mean to that.
But always to your own self be true.
Ooh, and no man is an island unto himself.
I am a rock, yes. All that kind of thing.
Don't get no Simon and Garfunkel, because they're just rock and rollers. They have nothing to do with the class.
Well, everything in the 60s had something to do with it at some point.
But they think they're so important that they don't have to watch for their neighbors, because their neighbor is the people they're living with.
Uh-huh.
And that's why they're next door.
Yeah, true. Well, I think you've given us a lot to think about.
I hope so, because I think a lot of people out there got a lot of space to think with.
That's quite true, especially around here.
Yeah, damn sure.
Well, thanks for calling, Sammy.
Take it easy, man, Eric.
Okay, take care.
Good night.
Bye. Oh, boy. 632-6901. Give us a call. We're talking about the FCC, radio, and all kinds of other fun things that come along. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Hi. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Oh,
I want to talk about something that you sort of touched upon earlier, and that's Howard Stern.
What kind of phone are you talking through?
I don't know.
I don't like to embarrass people about these kind of things, but it sounds like you're talking through a very cheap phone.
Every time I call you, you say that, and every time I call you, I call from a different phone.
Well, can you drop the phone you're at now?
Can I drop it?
Yeah, if you drop it, I can tell what kind of phone it is.
I don't want to drop it and lose the line.
Oh, you see, it's that kind of phone. If you drop it, it's going to break. If it was an old-fashioned phone, you'd just hear a nice noise, but it would never break. Anyway, go ahead with your call.
Okay, well, what I was going to say is it seems to me that the FCC sets these rules for all the radio people, and it bunches all the radio people together. Now, there are people who want to be able to use a couple of words here and there to express their views, how they feel.
Uh-huh.
And then there are people who use these words to shock people. I mean, like Howard Stern, I think that's why he takes advantage of all the rules.
Uh-huh.
Now, I think the FCC sets this rule, or these rules, for everybody, and this limits the people who want to use it once in a while just to tell what they think. And the people who use it for shock value are strong enough to get away with it anyway. So it's kind of defeating their purpose.
Well, the people that use it for shock value, like you said, they're strong enough to fight it, to be a test case. The Muzak stations and the Top 40 stations never need to even delve into the world of indecency. They just have to keep their teenagers and middle-aged housewives buying whatever products they peddle in between the songs. The only people that are really affected by this, and I mean affected by it literally, are people like us that do non-commercial radio that have to talk about real things and real issues and occasionally say things that some people might find offensive or allow other people to say things that others might find offensive, whether it be political or of any kind of nature.
Yeah,
so,
and you're right. It does make people paranoid about what they're saying because they're always wondering. Well,
and if you're paranoid about what you're saying, then you lose the whole gist of what you're trying to get out. You know, you lose the confidence that you have behind what you say, because if you think you're going to get in trouble for saying what's on your mind, you're not going to say it with as much conviction.
It's true. And, you know, I think people like Howard Stern kind of push back people like USC people who aren't taking advantage of anything. They just want to talk.
Yeah, all I know is because of Howard Stern, USB has been affected quite a bit, and we've been made to feel very paranoid about lots of things. And yeah, a direct result of Howard Stern, who really didn't prove anything or get anything out of it or say anything meaningful at all. I don't want to be too judgmental because that's exactly what we're trying to fight against, but I just don't think he had anything really to say.
Right. But, well, there's something else I want to mention. The Motion Picture Association is made up of industry people, am I correct?
I believe so, but don't quote me on it. Go ahead.
I think it's made up of movie industry people. Now, if movie industry people are sitting there rating other movies, and their friends in the industry and their, I don't know, enemies or competitors in the industry, I would tend to think that would kind of bias them on how they read something.
Well, as long as they're human beings, they're going to be biased some way. And if they're insiders in the business, yes, you're right, they certainly will be biased. Is it possible to get perfection when you're dealing with humans? And thank God for that. I believe Rob had something to say. I don't know if you can hear Rob.
Yeah, well, I think the Howard Stern issue really comes to the heart of the contradictions that revolve around this whole question, and that is, okay, as of yesterday's Court of Appeals ruling, Howard Stern could do his show from, say, 10 p.m. at night to 6 a.m. in the morning and be absolutely protected by the Constitution. And yet if he tries to do his show, which he does continue to do, from 6 a.m. in the morning till 10 p.m. at night, he's not constitutionally protected against being indecent.
It's a heck of a long show, too.
Now, it seems that, once again, I'll just say one more time, that if his speech is constitutionally protected at one time of the day and not at another, there seems to be something wrong, and I don't see how they're going to address this problem, this basic problem about freedom of speech. Why is one free to speak at one time and not another? And this is regardless of what Howard Stern has to say and the value judgment one passes upon the content of his program. If he's free to say it at one time of the day, why isn't he free to say it another time? Why aren't we free to say things at a specific time of day?
It's all under the blanket of protection. We're protecting our young kids from this horrible stuff that's going to mutate them or something. Now, take that away. Take away the protection aspect of it, and what's left? There's pure control of what we say and what we hear. And that's offensive to most people. It still is offensive to most people, I think. But the protection idea, I think that's where you can get away with a lot.
But if we are so concerned about protecting our children, as we've said over and over again, why aren't we trying to regulate other forms of evil that seeps into the consciousness of the children of this country?
I think they're trying to regulate everything that can seep into the consciousness. Phone calls, those dial-a porn numbers, radio, films, records, books, everything. There's a group for every little...
But at the same time, you don't see the Food and Drug Administration or something along those lines trying to regulate the kind of junk that children are fed from fast food franchises, which poses a very real health threat to children. There doesn't seem to be any kind of problem with that, and the list could go on and on. War toys, for example, getting your niece or nephew a model of an Uzi submachine gun for Christmas so that they can practice shooting, throughout the year, so when they get ready to enlist.
But if the government was to step in and say, we don't want Uzi submachine guns to be sold, toy Uzi submachine guns, that is, to be sold to kids anymore, I don't know if I'd feel comfortable with that, because, well, what business is it of the government to say this cannot be sold to children anymore because it's not moral enough?
Exactly my point. So what is the point of telling Howard Stern he can't go on the air at 6 a.m. in the morning, regardless of what he has to say?
Uh-huh.
Go ahead.
Well, I think that there's an element of trying to blame whatever is easiest to blame for a problem that's all over the society. I mean, think about it this way. I can't imagine many little kids hearing F-words here and there on the radio, but my little cousin was 4 years old, and he turned around and he cursed me out so well. You know he doesn't listen to radio.
Uh-huh.
But it's easier to say that radio does it, and it's radio's fault, and it's Howard Stern's fault, and so we're going to stop it, and that the problem's going to go away.
Uh-huh.
I think it's easier for them to blame radio and the media, although I guess some of the media is to blame, but it's easier for them to just blame everything and say stop everything, instead of going to the society and saying, well, teach your kids right. Now I'm saying my aunt isn't teaching my cousin right.
Uh-huh.
Did that make sense?
I think so. It's an individual type of a thing. It's so hard to make this into something that applies to everybody. That's pretty much the point I think we've been making.
I think it should be in the education, not in eliminating whatever seems to be harmful.
Yeah, because basically it's society saying society is messed up and it's your fault, so we're gonna ban you. But in actuality, it's something that's wrong with all of us. It's a disease inside everybody, and it should be treated that way. Not there is no one cause, and it's certainly not a one particular record or one particular book that caused all the indecency in society. If there are indecent thoughts, and if everybody agrees it's an indecent thought that's prevalent, We have to figure out what made us develop in that way. So there's different ways of approaching it.
You know how great it is to pick up the phone and just tell people how you feel?
It's really something. And if there are folks out there that haven't tried it yet, you're running out of time. 632-6901. It's one of those things that you can only do in Stony Brook.
That's true. Well, maybe. Have a good night, guys.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
Bye.
Bye. 632-6901, area code 516. The program is Brain Damage, and we're on until midnight. Good evening. You are on Brain Damage.
Hello. I am calling about the person who said that censorship is bad.
Okay.
Censorship has been around for many, many years. As far back as I can think.
As far back as what?
I can think.
Okay.
I remember censorship when I lived in the old country.
Okay.
Come over here to America, who is the land of the free.
What is the old country, sir?
Bangladesh.
Bangladesh. Okay, I think you've called before. Go ahead.
Yes. Well, I lived on the northern part of Bangladesh.
What are people who live in Bangladesh called?
Excuse me?
What are they called?
Bengalis.
Okay. Just checking. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, what would you check? They all know that.
I just have a list here. I was checking. Don't worry.
Bengalis think in a different way than American people. But when I come here to America, and I think of this land of the free, home of the brave, everybody's free here. Everybody can say what they want. But you should not say it on the radio.
Or on TV, or in the films, or in books.
This is proper English, not to swear in front of women. You should not swear in front of women, even though the women can swear much, much worse than men. I know a woman, oh my goodness.
Yeah,
but anyway, this is like just basic right and wrong about of what could be done in proper company. That's all it is. You are taken aback?
I am taken aback. That moment of silence was me sort of just contemplating all of that.
But maybe there was a problem with your phone.
No problems here. No problems at all. But I want to thank you for calling and sharing that with us.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye. I don't know what that was he said at the end, but let's hope it wasn't indecent. Rob, I want to thank you for coming by tonight and lending your visions and ideas and thoughts on this whole subject.
Thank you for having me, Eric.
Final concluding thoughts on this whole matter? Not that it's over by any means.
It certainly isn't over. And once again, I'd like to thank you, Eric, for bringing this repeatedly onto your show, this issue. And I think that people out there are very interested in hearing continued discussion about the issue. And I think there are many, many facets to it that need to be explored. And hopefully it'll keep being done on USB and elsewhere. And I'm happy to be part of it. So thank you very much.
Okay, well, as long as we're here, we're going to talk about the things that matter, the things that are in the news and are interesting. We don't just talk about boring issues. We talk about things that have a direct effect on us, either as a radio station or as individual people. And you'll find if you go through the newspapers and magazines that a lot more things than you think really do have an effect on your life and on the lives of those people immediately around you. A lot of times we just look at the paper and say, oh, that doesn't affect me, that's boring. But it's not that simple. You can walk around and actually see what a particular story means. And I think this is one of them. I don't know how many people opened the New York Times today. Didn't even have to open the New York Times today. Just look at the New York Times. It was on the front page. And see the article about the FCC ruling being taken back or whatever the word is for it. That does affect everybody who can turn on a radio and tune to 90.1 FM, because it affects what you are allowed to hear. And then what you hear affects what you think. And what you think affects what you say to people and what they say to you. And it just keeps going on and mushrooming like that. So that's something to ponder for however long you care to ponder it. One more thing before we leave tonight. I just would like to remind people, I don't know if it's still clear outside, but I saw this last night and I swore that I would pass it along to people on the air tonight. I'm not a Joel Block or anything like that, but there's a tremendous astronomical event taking place in the skies. Last night, at about, I guess it was 4 in the morning, if you went outside and you looked up in the sky, you saw the moon, as it was, the full moon, as it was getting near the western horizon, and it was setting, behind the moon, probably about a fifth of the way up in the sky, you saw this brilliant red object known as Mars. Then about the same distance away from that, you saw another brilliant white object, which was Jupiter. And then about the same distance away from that, you saw an even brighter than all the others, except, of course, for the moon, another bright white object, which was Venus. And I've never in my life known of a time when you could look up in the sky and see so many different objects of our solar system in the same sky, and all fairly bright. And, of course, they all are in the same path. They all rise and set along the ecliptic, elliptic orbits or something like that. Anyway, they all rise in the same path and set in the same path. And the sun, of course, is coming up right after Venus comes up. So I don't know how it's going to be tonight, because the moon will be a little bit closer to Mars. Not physically closer, but to our eyes it will appear to be closer. So if you're up at 4 in the morning or 3 in the morning, or even if you want to go outside now, you'll probably see something. You'll see a moon followed by Mars and Jupiter and Venus and eventually the sun. It's quite a sight to behold. And I believe Mars is brighter now than it has been in many years. So that's one thing that you might not be encouraged to go out and do, but why not? You know, why not stay up a little late tonight and just go out and see that? Unless, of course, it's raining, and then it'll be a bummer all the way through. So, something to think about. More things to think about here. The brothers are coming in now, and they'll give you even a greater list of things to think about. What are we thinking about tonight, Nick?
We're thinking about how beautiful it is here in the studio.
Is it beautiful here tonight?
Yeah, of course.
Well, we have fans. The temperature's gone down a degree. It's only 88 in here now instead of 90.
Eric, also astronomical. I believe it's the Perseus meteor shower.
Meteor shower. I always forget about those.
Very
every
shortly
year.
Coming up. Yes, within the next week or so.
Well, it's going to rain for sure, because it always rains when I remember it.
That does last about 2 or 3 days. The main day is the best day to see it, because you don't have to wait that much. But for 2 days prior and 2 days afterwards, it's very intense.
Well, I wish we would do more things up there in the skies.
I wish we could.
I'm looking forward to that Mars mission, and hoping that we'll get some good pictures out of that, like we did in 76.
Yes, that was fascinating.
Yeah. Well, we can only hope for astronomical events of that kind. But that's another program. That's another day. We'll be back again next week with Brain Damage at 10 o'clock at night. The new indecent version of Brain Damage. And we'll be back, of course, every week from 10 to 12. Stay tuned for The Brothers and Lobotomy and all kinds of other neat programs and sounds here on the first station of the 90s, WUSB, Stony Brook.
The lunatics are in my hall. The paper holds their folded faces to the floor. And every day the paper boy grins more. Thank you.
you see, all that you taste, and all you feel, and all that you love, and all that you hate, and all you distrust, and all you say, and all that you give, and all that you feel, and all that you buy.
This is Nick Bodge from the Lime Spiders. That's Lime Spiders. Yeah, that's right. L-I-M-E. And you're listening to 91... Yeah. You're listening to 90.1 FM WUSC Stony Brook.